This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Please listen to verse 255 of chapter Baqarah, recited by Mr. Ali Askar Burumand.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Allahu la ilaha illa
Allah
صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Allah is He, besides whom there is no God, the ever-living, the self-subsisting, by whom all subsist. Slumber does not overtake him, nor sleep. Whatever is in the heavens, and whatever is in the earth, is his. Who is he that can intercede with him, but by his permission? He knows what is before them and what is behind them, and they cannot comprehend anything out of his knowledge except what he pleases. His knowledge extends over the heavens and the earth, and the preservation of them both tires him not, and he is the Most High, the Great.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
A U.S. government watchdog says Washington learned no lesson from the war in Afghanistan and will repeat its failures in the future. Australia deploys its military in Sydney to help enforce harsh coronavirus lockdowns amid public anger over the restrictions. The World Trade Organization warns that global disparities in coronavirus vaccine rates could impact worldwide economic recovery. That's also in the headlines. Welcome to World News from our headquarters in the reigning capital, Tehran. It's great to have you with us. A U.S. watchdog has slammed Washington's, quote, hubris in Afghanistan, warning that the Afghan government could face an existential crisis due to American policies. The U.S. Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction, John Sopko, noted that, quote, mendacity was another key factor in Washington's failure to create a more effective Afghan military. He slammed the high-ranking U.S. defense officials and diplomats for lying to themselves and to the public, saying they exaggerated the situation in Afghanistan. He also cited the repeated failure of top officials to learn from their mistakes. The U.S. invaded Afghanistan in 2001 under the pretext of fighting terrorism. 20 years later, Washington is leaving the country, but Afghanistan is still unstable and is marred by violence. Political commentator Brian Berlitick says the U.S. wants a dependent and weak Afghanistan so that it can control the country. He says Washington never cared about the welfare of the Afghan people.
The entire idea of the U.S. invading a sovereign nation and then occupying it for 20 years, this is actually where the U.S.'s problems started. Yes, in the report they talk about the shortcomings of this, you know, so-called nation building that the U.S. was engaged in. I think some of that criticism is actually well-founded, but again, I don't think it goes far enough. A lot of these contractors that were brought in didn't care about building a prosperous Afghanistan. They wanted their money, and then they wanted to submit tenders for the next contract. They didn't care what the outcomes were. Building a prosperous Afghanistan was never really America's interests in Afghanistan. It was really to foil and create problems for the nations bordering Afghanistan. The U.S. never wanted to build infrastructure and sustainable institutions in Afghanistan because eventually Afghanistan would be a prosperous, independent country. U.S. was still doing this exercise in imperialism where they wanted a dependent, weak nation that they could control. And they were doing it in a region of the world that was, you know, what they were doing in Afghanistan was at cross purposes with every one of Afghanistan's neighbors. How was this ever supposed to work?
North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has called for stronger capabilities to cope with what he sees as any military provocation of enemies. Kim made the comment in a meeting with military officers. He accused hostile forces of bolstering their capabilities for making a preemptive attack on North Korea. Kim said adversaries are intensifying war drills for aggression. He did not mention any country, but his comments come ahead of annual military drills by the US and South Korea next month. The North sees the drills as invasion rehearsal amid long-running tensions over its nuclear and missile programs. The US and its regional allies say the programs should end. Pyongyang says it wants them for self-defense. Japan plans to expand a state of emergency to four more regions as COVID cases spike to records amid the Tokyo Olympics. The government has proposed states of emergency in Osaka and three regions near Olympic host Tokyo through August 31. It also plans to extend existing states of emergency for Tokyo and Okinawa by the same date. That comes as COVID surges in Japan. On Thursday, new daily cases topped 10,000 for the first time. The authorities blamed the surge on highly transmissible Delta variant, denying any link with the Olympics. Delta has also increased infections in the Philippines in recent days. The government now plans a two-week lockdown in the capital, Manila. It will begin on August 6. Australia has deployed hundreds of military forces to its largest city, Sydney, to help enforce new COVID lockdown rules. The forces will help police in virus hotspots to ensure that people observe the rules. The restrictions come into effect on Friday and will last until August 28. They include a 5-kilometer travel limit. Sydney officials imposed the lockdown as COVID cases have surged, despite some restrictions already in place for more than a month. The surge is blamed on an outbreak of the Delta variant that has also forced the curbs in other Australian cities. Public anger runs high over the restrictions that brought people to the streets last week. Authorities have warned against new anti-lockdown protests this weekend. And a new World Health Organization report says the United States has registered the highest number of new COVID-19 cases globally in the last week. The report stated that the U.S. logged over 500,000 infections for the week ending July 25th. That's a 131% increase compared to the week prior. The spike comes as the Delta variant continues to spread across the globe. Vaccination rates have also slowed in the U.S. More than 34 million Americans have been infected with COVID-19 and nearly 612,000 deaths recorded so far in the U.S. The total number of cases worldwide could surpass 200 million in the next 2 weeks if the trend continues. Now, the World Trade Organization has warned that global disparities in coronavirus vaccine rates could impact worldwide economy recovery. The WTO chief, Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala, said failure to ensure global access to vaccines poses a serious threat to the world's economy. She especially warned about the case for low-income countries where barely over 1% of the population has received even one dose. The International Monetary Fund also issued a similar warning on Tuesday, saying vaccine access emerged as the principal fault line along which the global recovery splits into two blocks. Political commentator Jack Rasmus says if rich countries do not contribute to vaccine distribution in the world, COVID-19 will stick around for longer, further damaging their economies.
Vaccines are pretty much manufactured in the developed countries here, so a lot of countries are totally dependent on receiving the vaccines. And there's big responsibility to do that, to make sure you have enough production and it gets distributed. Not all countries that have vaccines are really stepping up to that responsibility, you know, and it'll come back to haunt them. The longer we don't have the whole world vaccinated, the more likely you're going to get new and more virulent strains. Right now, of course, this Delta strain's pretty serious, more contagious, but if you don't get everybody vaccinated, then, you know, you're going to have mutations, and maybe the next one will be sufficient to negate the effects of the vaccines themselves. So it's very serious that the whole world isn't getting vaccinated fast enough. Of course, some of these countries, you know, they're almost failed states, and their governments are not really even capable, if they had the vaccines, of getting them distributed. But that's a secondary problem. The main problem is if you don't get the vaccines, and the longer this goes on, the more likely you're going to get even more serious strains of this virus.
The Tunisian president has appointed former national security advisor Ridha Garsalawi to run the interior ministry. Qais Said also pledged to implement the constitutional text and safeguard the people's rights and freedoms. On Sunday, the president dismissed the government and suspended the parliament for a month. Said said he made the move to save his country from corruption and plots to sow civil strife amid a surge in misgovernance, a faltering economy, and a spiraling COVID-19 outbreak. Tunisians are awaiting the appointment of a new prime minister and the announcement of a plan to end the political and economic crisis in the country. A Kaduna State High Court has set free prominent Muslim cleric Sheikh Ibrahim Zakzaki and his wife Malama Zina of all charges after nearly 6 years in detention. Press TV's correspondent Denjum Abdullahi has the details from Kaduna in northern Nigeria.
Sheikh Ibrahim El Zakzaki and his wife.
Addressing the press, a member of Zazaki's defense team said the Kaduna State High Court discharged and acquitted Sheikh Zazaki and his wife Zinat of all 8 charges. The judge ruled that the prosecution has failed to establish any case against the leader of the Islamic movement in Nigeria and his wife.
The court ruled that the charge ought not to be in the first place. You cannot arraign a man for an offense that was allegedly committed, as at the time the said crime was not an offense. And the court was very emphatic in that yes, the Kaduna State government has powers to enact laws, but it cannot enact laws to prosecute an offense retrospectively.
Sheikh Zazaki and his wife Zinat were arrested in December 2015 following an attack on his home and worship center by soldiers of the Nigerian army, which resulted in the killing of hundreds of Zazaki's supporters. In a statement, the Islamic movement said the judgment is a vindication of Sheikh Zazaki and a victory for truth and justice against tyranny and oppression.
The events of December 12th and 15th of 2015 were orchestrated by state machineries who are using the instrumentalities of state apparatus to fight a religious fight. It is strictly the events of December 12, 2015 is strictly a fight between Shiites and Sunnis, fights that was imported from Saudi Arabia for whatever purpose.
The Kaduna State High Court has set Sheikh Zazaki and his wife Zinat free. The Islamic movement and indeed many of Zazaki's supporters have expressed happiness with the outcome of this judgment. Anjum Abdullahi, Kaduna.
Sudan's authorities warn about the rising number of Ethiopian refugees crossing the Sudanese border. This comes after Ethiopia's federal government declared a unilateral ceasefire with the rebellious forces in the northern region of Tigray.
3,000 of Ethiopian refugees crossed the Sudanese borders on Monday, arriving at Taya village at Basunda locality in Gadarif state. Reports say the refugees is considered the biggest number of refugees to cross into the country in only one day since the outbreak of war last November in Tigray region. Many believe that the wave may worsen security and humanitarian situation in the region due to armed conflicts erupting at western area of Ethiopia.
Sudan has adopted an open-door policy in receiving Ethiopian refugees since the beginning of the conflict. So far, Sudan has welcomed about 75 to 80,000 refugees. We call on the international community to help us meet the needs of the increasing refugees fleeing from the fight in the Tigray region.
Since the beginning of fighting, tens of thousands of Ethiopians have sought safety in Sudan. But conditions in Sudan refugee camps are presenting a new challenges, as Sudanese NGOs early responded to humanitarian situation in states affected of refugees influx.
Actually, since the crisis of the refugees started, the Tigray crisis started, Sudanese Red Crescent has been present from day one. And that is basically because we do have our ongoing activities in the region through our branches in Kassala and Gadarif. So we do have ongoing programs for the already existed old refugees in the area. So with the beginning of the crisis, we were already on the ground.
In the light of the latest development in the Tigray region, UN agencies strive to maintain a strong staff presence, provided there is access in Hamadayet in case there is an increased influx. Several partners continue to remain on the ground in anticipation of this possibility.
Security and health challenges face Sudanese and Ethiopian governments to cope with increasing number of refugees. Khartoum says it is still waiting for international support to tackle the crisis. Muhammad Ali Fazari, Khartoum.
The outgoing administration of Iranian President Hassan Rouhani has met with Iran's leader, who had some observations regarding its performance, especially on the nuclear deal. The leader's statement spelled an air of pessimism about whether the talks would be successful or not. He said the next administration should not repeat the mistakes made by the current one. Much of the topics covered by Iran's leader were on the performance of President Hassan Rouhani and his administration. One of the views he expressed was that the outgoing administration's experience proved that putting trust in the West did not work. He also referred to how the U.S. attempted to add new terms to the agreement to push Iran to begin talks on other issues like its missile program or regional activities.
6 rounds of negotiations have been held so far in the Austrian capital, Vienna, to revive the Iran nuclear deal, which has come to be known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action with the JCPOA. 3 years ago, the U.S., under former President Donald Trump, withdrew from the Iran nuclear deal and branded what it called the Maximum Pressure Campaign against Iran. Now President Joe Biden, who was the Vice President of the United States when the deal was inked, has promised to re-enter the JCPOA and abandoned Trump's failed maximum pressure campaign.
Iran's position on the JCPOA and international law has been clear and consistent since the signing of the JCPOA in 2015. And so as such, I don't believe that an incoming Raisi administration or frankly any new incoming Iranian presidential administration would handle the current talks and negotiations any differently.
But so far, he's practically followed the footsteps of his predecessor. President-elect Ibrahim Raisi will be officially sworn in on August 5th. Raisi won the June 18 presidential election in a landslide victory, garnering over 18 million votes. It's widely believed that the foreign policy in Iran has a well-established and large-scale framework. When it comes to the issue of the Vienna talks, Iran's policies are not going to change. Therefore, no fundamental changes are expected in the negotiation process under the next administration. However, analysts believe the next administration needs to bolster the national position of Iran to successfully counter the bullying stance of the U.S. and its allies.
That brings an end to our news bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com irib.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
The Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness, and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers, whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change, and that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive, and make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
In the limelight.
Revision of mask guidelines comes amid a surge in COVID cases as Delta variant in the U.S. becomes more prevalent, says Martin Pengley, reporter, in an article published under the heading, CDC advises vaccinated people to wear masks indoors in Delta surge areas. Stay tuned for more. The U.S. top health agency revised its mask guidance recently and now recommends fully vaccinated Americans wear masks indoors in certain places. In a shift from its earlier guidance issued on May 13th, which said vaccinated individuals did not need to wear masks in most indoor settings, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, now advises Americans to wear a mask in public indoor settings with substantial and high transmission. This comes amid a surge in COVID cases as the highly contagious Delta variant has become more prevalent. The recent updated guidelines come 2 months after the CDC revised its mask guidance for vaccinated people. The guidance, which still called for wearing masks in crowded indoor settings like buses, planes, hospitals, prisoners, and homeless shelters, had cleared the way for reopening workplaces and other venues. The CDC now recommends that fully vaccinated people living with vulnerable household members, such as those who are immunocompromised and children, wear masks in indoor public spaces. In addition, the agency recommended everyone in K-12 schools wear masks, including teachers, staff, students, and visitors, regardless of vaccination status, said the CDC director, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, in a press briefing recently. In recent days, I have seen new scientific data from recent outbreak investigations showing that the Delta variant behaves uniquely differently from past strains of the virus that caused COVID-19, Walensky said, referring to scientists' discovery of the Delta strain shedding as actively in breakthrough infections as it does in unvaccinated individuals, despite the rarity of breakthrough cases. For months, COVID cases, deaths, and hospitalizations were falling steadily, but the highly infectious Delta variant of the coronavirus has fueled steep rises in case numbers, particularly among unvaccinated Americans and amid struggles with disinformation and resistance, particularly on the political right. Nobody wants to go backward, but you have to deal with the facts on the ground. And the facts on the ground are that it's a pretty scary time, and there are a lot of vulnerable people, Robert Watcher, chairman of the Department of Medicine at the University of California, San Francisco, told the Washington Post. I think the biggest thing we got wrong was not anticipating that 30% of the country would choose not to be vaccinated. In recent weeks, a growing number of cities and towns across the U.S. have restored indoor masking rules. St. Louis, Savannah, Georgia, and Provincetown, Massachusetts are among the places that reimposed mask mandates this month. More than 162.7 million Americans are vaccinated, or 49% of the population, according to the CDC. California and New York announced recently that they would require all government employees to get the coronavirus vaccine or face weekly COVID-19 testing. and the Department of Veterans Affairs became the first major federal agency to require healthcare workers to receive the shot. In New York City, Mayor Bill de Blasio announced that all municipal workers, including teachers and police officers, will be required to get vaccinated by mid-September or face weekly COVID-19 testing, making the city one of the largest employers in the U.S. to take such an action. Let's be clear about why this is so important. This is about the recovery, de Blasio said. California said it will similarly require proof of vaccination or weekly testing for all state workers and healthcare employees starting next month.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
It is being called the story of the year. An Israeli spying company has been caught selling software to authoritarian regimes that have used it to surveil more than 50,000 people worldwide. That company is NSO, founded in 2010 by former members of Unit 8200, the Israeli military's notorious intelligence squad. Their product is called Pegasus, and it was sold to military, law enforcement, and intelligence agencies in 40 countries, among them some of the world's worst human rights abusing governments. Pegasus is able to attack the cell phones of targeted individuals without them realizing it, monitoring and recording their calls, texts, and accessing other information stored on their devices. Dozens of human rights activists, nearly 200 journalists, several Arab royals, and more than 600 politicians are known to have had their communications spied on and compromised. Among those include French President Emmanuel Macron, Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan, and President of Iraq, Barham Saleh. It gets juicier. Close associates of the Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi were also attacked and compromised just before his murder by Saudi operatives in 2018, strongly indicating that the information gleaned through Pegasus was crucial in his murder. NSO vehemently denied that their product was used in the assassination. Yet it also put out a statement insisting that it had no access to what its clients did with the software, two seemingly contradicting assertions here. Among those who had their communications and devices spied on by Pegasus were journalists, human rights activists, business executives, academics, and prominent political leaders. The NSO group and its Pegasus software is clearly a major scandal that deserves scrutiny. However, the treatment of the incident by the media has largely absolved the Israeli government of any role in that affair. despite the fact that the NSO Group sales of Pegasus to foreign governments has been approved and defended by Israel's government. This, of course, means that Israel's government has obvious responsibility in the whole scandal as well. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. Accusations that spy software known as Pegasus may have been used to carry out surveillance on journalists, activists, and even kings, presidents, and political leaders highlights that surveillance is now for sale. Guess who's selling? Israel. The ability to remotely access phones was once considered something only a few states could do. But high-end espionage and surveillance powers, when in the hands of a rogue entity like Israel, can easily turn into a commercialized weapon that breaches personal privacy in a fraudulent access to personal electronic devices, which would definitely lead to criminal association. To discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Dr. Hassan Yunus, author, expert in international business management. Thank you very much for being with us, Dr. Hassan. Now, the Israeli spyware is a breach of personal privacy and a fraudulent access to personal electronic devices. Most alarming is the freedom of expression and freedom of speech here for the journalists, which is basically the foundation of their work. It is being jeopardized by such spyware and malware. Now, the consequences of this is critical, and it might lead to criminal act, hint, the Khashoggi case, for example. Do you think this scandal will finally expose Israel's espionage role all over the world, or maybe just another anti-Semitism card will be played?
Thanks a lot for hosting me, Marwa. It gives me pleasure to be on your show. This spyware has been implemented in a very rude way, and all the documents show that. It leverages cutting-edge technology, unique technology. A lot of research and development was invested in this spyware. Definitely it's a great violation of human rights, and this is a violation of the Article 19, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the International Human Rights Law, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. That's why it's being more rude than ever before, especially when you do this kind of espionage. Actually, in business and in politics, we can do kind of due diligence on our opponents, on our rivals. Yet, when it's used in an unethical manner, it becomes espionage. In business, we talk about industrial espionage. In politics, we talk about this kind of crisis. And you start connecting the dots and start linking the information which was leaked from those who were under attack. Literally, it's an attack to many of the incidents which have come, many of which are which have happened, many of which were criminal incidents. So, when you talk about Israel, for example, the nature of business of Israel, the nature of what they do is a criminal. So, when you want to develop this multi-billion-dollar spyware, then you will use it on your supply chain, on the activities which you do, whether upstream activities, downstream activities, it depends. But it has to be linked to some kinds of criminal activities, whether through you or through some of your partners in the region, locally, internationally. It depends on the target which you want to achieve.
Well, Dr. Hassan, this spyware was developed with cutting-edge technology, as you just mentioned, which basically requires massive investments, research, and development activity. This requires state interventions, maybe consortium organizations to contribute to this spyware. How much does that mean that the U.S. and the U.K. government were actually on board from the beginning?
Yeah. Actually, this spyware leverages the power of the fourth industrial revolution, which is social, mobile, analytics, and the cloud. It requires the cloud computing. It requires giving access to this kind of cloud to do the computing. It requires huge power to do the analytics of big data, in addition to social and mobile, which are the two components of the fourth industrial revolution. This requires major investments, huge investments, which individual companies can't afford, which a consortium by itself can't afford. It requires consortia, probably, and definitely of superpowers. It's not a secret that the U.S. And the U.K. can be part of this consortium because they are in very strong ties with Israel. They have alliances on several fronts. So when it comes to this technology, which is usually exported from the West to our region, then the US and the UK should have a say and should have an investment in research and development. Not any nation has this access to research and development. It is in the hands of few top powers where the Silicon Valley is, where the leading softwares are. So definitely the US and the UK have a hand. I don't think it's a secret, so I don't think that they are trying to hide this. It's very apparent to everyone.
Well, the leaks raised several concerns and prompted international bodies to condemn these operations. Now, Lebanon, our country, was not immune from this spyware, where attempts have been made to eavesdrop on about 300 phone numbers in Lebanon by the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, which reveals the extent of the role of Saudi Arabia in preoccupation, basically, in Lebanon's affairs, despite the fact they keep saying it's none of our business. It specifically culminates in the case of former Prime Minister Saad al-Hariri, and as his phone was subjected to surveillance by said state. I mean, why would such an Arab regime be spying on their own asset to begin with in a country like Lebanon?
Because we're part of the business of these countries. So when we talk about the Lebanese politics, we have never been the decision makers in Lebanon. We receive the decisions from the superpowers. The superpowers can be the USA, Russia, UK, any superpower at the international level using some of their tools in the region. These tools can be some of the regimes in the region. And we know the rivalry between between the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and the ex-Prime Minister Saad Hariri. Not a rivalry, we know the state of dislike, if I don't want to exaggerate. Mm-hmm. They don't want him to be the Prime Minister. It was apparent. Otherwise, he would have been the elected president. Many people talk about kind of personal conflicts between MBS and Saad Hariri. Mm-hmm. So this might have led to the espionage or the surveillance on his phone because they want access to his personal data because he's no more trustworthy. He's not trusted by the regional powers, especially by Saudi Arabia.
That's a very funny way of them showing that they care by actually tapping into his phone. But it is noteworthy that the two of the relatives of a Saudi journalist, the murdered Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi, who was killed in Istanbul in 2018, has been included in the leaked list of phone numbers targeted by this spyware, by Pegasus. This makes Israel complicit, by the way, with the regime of Mohammed bin Salman and the murder, and makes way for more crimes that occurred because of this software. What options do you think international bodies have to deal with this critical issue? And maybe the best question to ask is, do they have enough power to stop the Israeli exported espionage?
Yeah, actually, I'm not here to comment on the political aspect of what happened with Khashoggi or mm-hmm. with Allah in the UAE or with Mansour or many other names. Definitely, the judicial bodies and the journalists will do the connection of the dots. And I think when you connect the dots, when you put the different independent variables into the formula, you can come up with some critical conclusions, because this is the story of the year, as Edward Snowden has named it. Mm-hmm. Definitely, it requires. And I've read a lot of condemnation, if I can say, by the university. By people saying that this is a violation of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the international human rights law, the laws on civil and political rights. Many journalism associations worldwide have condemned this rude spyware, as I've said, because it's not any spyware. When Israel develops this spyware, uses its relationship with the top industrialized nations in the world, invests a lot in this bleeding edge technology, not only cutting edge, it's a bleeding edge technology. And the nature of the business of Israel has a criminal aspect, then this requires not only condemning it, but going a bit further than that, because it's a violation of our basic rights of freedom of expression. It's
and
invasion
of
our
basically.
Privacy. If my privacy is being invaded, then I will not feel free to express my opinions,
definitely,
whether political or not political.
Definitely.
So.
Such
invasion
a pleasure,
of privacy.
Dr. Hassan Younes,
it's my utmost pleasure, actually.
To discuss Pegasus and how it can affect everyone's lives, basically. Dr. Hassan Younes, author and expert in international business management, thank you very much for your time, for being with us to discuss this. Now, please stay tuned, because we will next be talking about TOCA.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marvo Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
Now, the abuse of Pegasus software has been known for several years. Though the latest revelations appeared to have gained such traction in the mainstream media owing to the high number of civilians who have reportedly been surveilled through its use. The continuation of the now years-long scandal surrounding the abuse of Pegasus has also brought considerable controversy and notoriety to the Israeli company that developed it, the NSO Group. While the NSO Group has become infamous, other Israeli companies with even deeper ties to Israel's intelligence apparatus have been selling software that not only provides the exact same services to governments, to intelligence agencies, but purports to go even farther than that. Come along, meet TOCA, the most dangerous Israeli spyware firm you've never heard of, in this following report.
Mainstream media's myopic focus on Israel's Pegasus spyware and the threats it poses means that the other companies, like TOCA, go uninvestigated, even when their product presents an even greater potential for abuse and illegal surveillance. Pegasus is merely the tip of the Israeli cyber spying iceberg. Another piece of software, TOCA, is far more dangerous and outrageous. TOCA markets itself as a one-stop hacking shop for governments that require extra capability to fight terrorists and other threats to national security in the digital domain. The company's software is designed to infiltrate any device connected to the internet, not just smartphones. Per the company, this includes devices like Amazon Echo, Google Nest connected home products, as well as connected fridges, thermostats, and alarms. Exploits in these products discovered by TOCA, the company said at the time, would not be disclosed to vendors, meaning those flaws would continue to remain vulnerable to any hacker, whether a client of TOCA or not. TOCA is a product of the Israeli national security state, having been co-founded by former Prime Minister Ehud Barak, and was also designed by members of Unit 8200. This suggests that it is a front for the Israeli government. TOCA was launched in 2018 with the explicit purpose of selling a, quote, tailored ecosystem of cyber capabilities and software products for governmental, law enforcement, and security agencies, unquote. Today, TOCA's software suite claims to offer its customers in law enforcement, government, and intelligence the ability to obtain targeted intelligence and to conduct forensic investigations as well as covert operations. TOCA's target clientele are the same as those of Pegasus, providing an easy opportunity for governments to gain access to even more surveillance capabilities than Pegasus offers, but without risking notoriety in the media, since TOCA has long avoided the limelight. The company's activities are concerning in light of the fact that TOCA has been directly partnered with Israel's Ministry of Defense and other Israeli intelligence and security agencies since its founding. The company works closely with these government agencies, according to Israel's Minister of Defense website. This collaboration, per TOCA, is meant to enhance their products. Turkey's direct collaboration with Israel's government is also made clear through its claim that it sells its products and offers its services only to trusted governments, law enforcement agencies, and intelligence agencies. Turkey has stated that Russia, China, and, quote, other enemy countries, unquote, would never be customers of the company. In other words, only countries aligned with Israeli policy goals, particularly in occupied Palestine, are permitted to be customers and gain access to its trove of powerful hacking tools. This is consistent with Israel's effort to leverage its high-tech sector as a means of countering the boycott, divest, and sanctions BDS movement globally.
To discuss this very critical issue with us from Los Angeles is Fiorella Isabel, journalist from the Convo Couch. Thank you very much, Fiorella. Toka, the most dangerous Israeli spyware firm that we've never heard of. And thanks to I have to give credit to journalist Whitney Webb for writing extensively about it. How come it is such a major spyware firm that does business at a governmental level, yet we have never heard about it at a global media level?
Right. So the media, the United States media particularly, right, all Western media, but United States media is the most heavily propagandized media. CNN, MSNBC, Fox, they only cover what they're told to. They're basically state stenographers for the security state agencies. You have more MSNBC and CNN hosts that have worked under the CIA and for national intelligence. So it's no surprise, given our strong relationship with Israel, our very, you know, symbiotic relationship with Israel, that this has been completely taken out. Now, we've talked about Pegasus and other NSOs, but the reason this is so, TOCA is so private, is because anything that comes out, whether it's a leak or anything that is promoted by mainstream media, like The Guardian, like every other mainstream media outlet, has to be carefully selected. So they're only going to tell you exactly, like, how much they're allowed to tell you.
According to a profile of that company, which is published by Forbes just shortly after it was launched, TOCA advertised itself as a one-stop hacking shop for governments that require extra capability to fight terrorism and other threats to national security in the digital domain. I want to focus about the, quote, threat to national security, unquote, issues. I bet my life that it is only sold to regimes in line with Israel's policy of occupation. How dangerous is that notion where colonial interventionist states are collaborating with Israel for espionage?
It's extremely dangerous, because if you go back to 2012, companies in the tech surveillance sector of Israel were essentially conducting investigations. And these investigations were also previously conducted by groups like Mossad. So in essence, these companies have been working for Israeli intelligence, but more have popped up since this time. And Cyber Reason is one of these companies. I can get into that later a little bit about how they have pretty much managed themselves into U.S. national intelligence regarding January 6th, but also they have a two-pronged approach regarding Israel. Israel wants to use these tech companies to stop any sort of counter-protest or any sort of appeal to Palestinian solidarity movements, the BDS movement, but they also want to conduct classified intelligence and defense operations through these companies, even though they operate publicly as private companies. And we know that the connection to the World Bank is essential. It was found to be involved in Israeli interests, and Haaretz themselves, which is the go-to news in Israel, showed us that Netanyahu set up an international committee to realize the potential of international development to strengthen, and I quote, the Israeli economy, improve Israel's political standing, and strengthen its international role. But they also admitted this was not philanthropic. So, like I said, we've seen the partnership between the World Bank and these fund projects also working in governments in Chile and Nigeria, two governments who particularly happen to be very, very pro-Palestinian and pro-BDS movement. Chile had a Palestinian caucus. It has the largest Palestinian community outside the Middle East, perhaps in the Americas. And so you see that this is no coincidence, the relationships that the intelligence of Israel and the United States is trying to insert itself.
Fiorella, given that the NSO's Pegasus targets only a smartphone talker, this hacking suit is classified as a lawful intercept product, which means it is capable of targeting any device that is connected to the internet, included but not limited to the smartphone. Now, tell me here if I'm being a bit paranoid, but for example, if an oven is connected to the internet or if a car is connected to the internet, you might just well die because of a spyware, wouldn't you?
Right. Toka can get into any device. That's the thing that nobody is talking about, that unlike the others that are specifically a lot, just limited to telephones, Toka can get into anything. Recently, there were accusations, in fact, from high-ranking military officials that in America, these Stingray devices were set up all over the White House. And of course, we know the Trump administration and the Biden administration's relationship to Israel. And we've seen how much power, right, that the U.S. government gives to Israel. And in its form of billions and billions of dollars per year, we just saw Joe Biden give billions to Israel when people in the United States are absolutely in need of any aid. But of course, we give this money to Israel in terms of propaganda, in terms of military weapons, and then of course aid them in terms of propaganda via AIPAC. And so, apart from these foreign governments, Toka and other tech surveillance like that can also be used on regular people. We know that the domestic violent extremist categorization now works on anyone with a political opinion, and that's a huge part of where this intelligence is going.
Very, very dangerous indeed. But something very interesting to end off our segment with is the investors of Toka, namely Amdocs and Comverse Infosys. They both were courted scandal in the late 90s, early 2000s for their role in a massive Israeli government espionage operation that targeted U.S. federal agencies during that period. Bottom line, Israel spied on the U.S. and it most probably still does spy on the U.S. How come this is not breaking news in the U.S. media?
Yeah, I mean, again, I go to the fact that the United States media is extremely, extremely pro-Israel, extremely, extremely pro-West. They will not propagandize this. And even independent media won't touch this. I mean, the vast majority of media focuses on electoral politics. They really don't cover the national security state. And in terms of covering this, you are, cast as a right-winger, as being anti-Semitic for simply criticizing the very, very incestuous relationship between the United States and Israel. And, we know that the NSA has expanded surveillance, right? Because recently, commentator Tucker Carlson, who is on the right, accused the NSA of spying on him, and he was ridiculed and gaslighted, even though we know from Snowden and WikiLeaks that the NSA absolutely does spy on Americans, and they have used the DHS to continue doing that via social media accounts. I mentioned the domestic violent extremists and how now they're categorizing anybody that is movement-led, meaning if you're pro-BDS, if you're pro-Palestinian, if you're anti-government, you are a domestic violent extremist, and they will be looking at your social media. So this is a potentially very dangerous and authoritarian situation we're in, not just for the world and foreign policy-wise, what these actors could do, but also for Americans and journalists who want to expose these companies.
Bye-bye freedom of speech and freedom of expression. I want to thank you very much. From Los Angeles, Fiorella Isabel, journalist from Beacon Vocouch, for waking up really early to be with us. Thank you very much for your time. And thank you. Please stay tuned next week for more from the Middle East Stream.
In the limelight.
at least 915 shootings in a single week leaves 430 dead and 1,007 wounded, with the U.S. on track for its deadliest year of gun violence, says Rachel Sharp, reporter, in an article titled U.S. Records One Shooting Every 12 Minutes. Stay tuned for more. The United States of America has recorded one shooting every 12 minutes recently, with at least 915 incidents leaving 430 dead and 1,007 wounded as gun violence spirals out of control across the nation. Data from the nonprofit Gun Violence Archive reveals more than 1,000 Americans were wounded or killed in shootings in the 7 days between Saturday, July 17th, and Friday, July 23rd. The shootings of the last week comes as the nation is on track to record its deadliest year of gun violence to date. Between January and July 24th, 2021, there has been 25,216 gun-related deaths, including homicides, murders, suicides, unintentional shootings, and defensive gun use incidents. On average, this means 123 people have died every single day in 2021. If the trend continues, almost 45,000 people will lose their lives to gun violence by the end of the year. This figure dwarfs the 43,563 shooting deaths recorded in 2020, which had been the deadliest year for shooting incidents in at least two decades.